Good Thursday morning. My name is Mark Farrow, coming to you live from New York City, the home of the Progressive Radio Network. The show is Insights. And it's a big week around here. Fashion Week wraps up tomorrow. Primary day. Please, wherever you live, not all states have big primaries today, but certainly New York has one. New Jersey, not so much. On a smaller level, New Jersey does. But for the gubernatorial race here, Andrew Cuomo is up against Cynthia Nixon. And a lot of people don't think that's going to be a tight race, but I don't know. Cynthia Nixon, I have to say I'm guilty about really not following up with her and what she stands for. But I'll get to that in a minute. We're going to meet Joe Bruno. Joe Bruno is the president and CEO of Helen Keller Services. One heck of a great guy. And is he throwing a party tonight? Whoa! Big gala. 125th anniversary of Helen Keller Services. Of serving people for 125 years. Joe Bruno alone has been serving the public for over four decades. We're going to meet Joe. He's a great guy. Melissa Moroz. She's an integrated mind and body therapist. Just a terrific person through and through. I'm really lucky to know both these people and excited to have them both on. Melissa's looking for a parking spot. Melissa, if you're listening, you just passed one. So yeah, gubernatorial race, Mario Cuomo, the bridge has been named after him. And the other day, I got to point out something pretty funny. I thought it was hysterical that Andrew Cuomo is yakking about his father. Of course, it's, it warrants it a bit because they named the Tappan Zee Bridge and New Tappan Zee Bridge. Then Tappan Zee Bridge links North Jersey to the Upper West Side. And Old Tappan is one of the towns, and it became known as the Tappan Zee Bridge. And they want to rename the new one, or name the new one, Mario Cuomo Bridge. And I got a problem with naming bridges, tunnels, anything after anyone political. Even the Brendan Byrne Arena, remember that? That was the, yes, it's their job to acquire funds. So if I do something great, should it be called the Mark Farrell Network? Oh, it's actually called the Gary Null Network. But it's his network. He started it. But if you're a politician, should bridges or subway stations be named after you? I don't know. I don't think so. You're there to serve the public, correct? So why should something of that caliber? Because it's interesting if you think about it. When you're when you work for the federal government or the state, you're not allowed to accept gifts above a certain monetary level. I'm going to say it's very low. I'd say like $25 on a state level. I'm not sure of the federal level. So if you think about how much money they could get, not that I'm suggesting that they should have the Tappan Zee Bridge, sold for rights, like, for example, calling it the Bank of America Bridge. If they were to call it the Bank of America Bridge, you know how much money they would get? If you do, tell me, because I don't. I mean, millions, hundreds of hundreds of millions to call that the Bank of America Bridge. Yeah, you go up Nyack, you make a right onto the Bank of America Bridge. You mean the Tappan Zee? Yeah, same thing. So now why should it be called the Mario Cuomo Bridge? Just because he was, he was a good governor for a long time. And his son is in his office. And, say what you will about the guy. Even if I didn't like him or love the guy, I would still have the same feeling. Because I just feel like that's something that, belongs to the public. Yeah, it's owned by quasi, probably New Jersey and New York Port Authority. But the reality is, I think it's just kind of very self-indulgent. Yes, I know he's not here to say it, but his son is here. And Mario, obviously, is very, very confident person, to say the least. I want to bring your attention to something pretty neat that happened, that's still happening this week, which is the New York Fashion Week. But more importantly, something that occurred to someone who is 21 years of age. She's a Spanish model. Her name is Marion Avila. And her quote is, "I wanted to show the world that there are no barriers," end quote. And the reason why she says that is because she has Down syndrome. And she's a model strutting it on the catwalk. How cool is that? Yeah. Let's hear it from Mariam. Great. She's not the first one. As a matter of fact, there's a woman who's been on a show here. Her name is Ayers. Last name is Ayers. Shania. Beautiful woman. She's been on her show. As a matter of fact, I have to admit to you at this very moment, it's my fault right now that she's not on the air today because I didn't follow through. She emailed me about, 4 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, and I realized this morning on weigh-in, it totally fell through the cracks. Sorry, I'm a one-person army here, and sometimes that happens. And I'm honest enough to tell you, that's how candid I am. But we will get her back on because she's part of an organization called Runway of Dreams, and it's fantastic that models or non-models have an opportunity to do something that they want to do in life. I mean, we all should have that opportunity, right? Absolutely. That's why we're here. And it's interesting when, you know, we think about barriers and her quote about how the world should have no barriers. We are the barriers. Yeah, sure, there are some logistical things sometimes, but people are the barriers. Absolutely. Don't you agree? Love your opinion. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. So we have a great show, as I mentioned to you before. We're going to be speaking to Joe Bruno, president of Helen Keller Services. We're getting him on the phone, and we're going to meet Melissa, who's going to share some incredible adversity with us that further proves that that hard work, tenacity, asking for assistance, and so much more is what it takes. sometimes it takes a special breed of person to really overcome really trying circumstances. But when you do, it makes you a stronger person, makes you totally incredible, bulletproof, Kevlar proof. No, you can't be Kevlar proof. Well, you're like Kevlar. You know what I'm saying. Anyway, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Of course, I welcome your emails anytime at markfarrowmotivation.com. Mark@markfarrowmotivation.com. I'd like to welcome to the show a gentleman who has been instrumental in taking Helen Keller Services to the next level. I met him about, half a year ago or so, and was instantly taken by his just ease. Professionalism, and zeal for impacting people's lives. Joe Bruno, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, Mark, thank you. And I'm equally impressed with you, buddy. And I want to meet this guy, Joe Bruno. He sounds pretty good.
Yeah, he does, right? So you got your party dress all picked out, my friend?
Yeah. We're ready to go tonight. You know, we're our 125th anniversary, as you mentioned. It's going to be at the Liberty Warehouse in Red Hook, Brooklyn. That's where I grew up. In fact, I live in the same house I was born in. Never lived anywhere else but in that area.
Really?
Same house.
Good
That's
for you.
Quite interesting.
You know, and now that house that was originally worth X is like worth quadruple that because of the gentrification?
Well, I'll tell you this. Grandpa bought it in 1907 for $7,000. It's worth a bit more than that now.
I'd say so.
My son knows that. He's already got his grip on it. So it'll be his as we go into the future.
Down boy. Just want to inform our listeners that Helen Keller Services enables individuals who are blind, visually impaired, deaf-blind, or have combined hearing and vision loss to live, work, and thrive in the communities of their choice. And there's nothing more tantamount than that, because to give someone a platform, the tools, the technology, even just a human connection, say, here's how you can do it, we're here to support you, is invaluable.
Hey, Mark, you know, in 1893, a gentleman who became blind due to a crime, he was shot and he lost his vision, started at the Industrial Home for the Blind in Brooklyn. And that was really at that time geared to getting manufacturing jobs for blind people because that's what people thought they could do and probably all they thought they could do. Sometime around the 60s, before I engaged with this group, they changed the name to Helen Keller Services. It really marked a change in the thinking. Today, we provide service from people from ages 1 to 100. We run a pre-K school for 3 to 5-year-olds, which is a city school. We run an early intervention program. We intersect with kids as they go into the regular school system. Although they're blind, they're put in the District 75 programs. Mm. While they're good, as you well know, sometimes it's hard to fit in. So we intersect with these kids and start looking at, as they start thinking about the future, what is it going to be? Education, college, skills, jobs. And if so, what do you need to do? So we provide services to people from ages, as I say, 1 through 100 in the area, for example, of a job. What makes you more independent than anything is a job, a way to pay for yourself, to have what you need, to feel independent and able to live in this world. Lots of services go in to do that, and we probably don't have the time to do all of them. But one I would mention is how to get around, how to orient yourself, and how to be mobile and get around in a sighted world. Very difficult, as you know, Mark, but it's and the people handle it differently. A blind person might come in and be totally unable to deal with this challenge. Mm. So we provide people social service, casework services, and whatever they need, and we teach them about the technology that has made their lives different. We know the technology intimately. Every one of our headquarters, which is located here in Brooklyn, in Hempstead, and out in Sands Point, and all of our locations, we have our technology and our technology experts so that when people come to us, we can show them what's available to make their lives easier and their transition from fear to independence. And that's what we're all about.
That's it? Well, Joe Bruno, it's never been more abundantly clear how invaluable and how all-encompassing Helen Keller Services is. It's really incredible. And the theme for tonight is Bridging the Future. And I like that because it means a lot of different things. And for me, it means the fact that, number one, first and foremost, it's all about the human connection. We can have technology, we can have programs, and they're invaluable, as you said, from ages 1 to 80 or 100. But the human connections are what make it work. The people who are really impassioned, and that's what I love about your organization.
Well, Mark, you know, I wrote this little note down just so I wanted to say it, and it's about this. It takes a lot of time, expertise, and dedication to help each individual who comes to us for service. So people always like to say, well, how many people do you touch? Well, we touch a lot of people, thousands and thousands.
And their families.
But this is not a numbers game. This is a what's your intensity for each individual, and what do you do to bring that person to be as independent as that person can be with all the frailties that we all come with, you know? So you are absolutely correct. It's the people that we have, their dedication. These are not highly paid people, but we have people here for 50 years in this organization, and they do it because they love what they do. Tonight, by the way, there'll be over 330 people. You're our MC.
I am? That's tonight, Joe?
That is tonight.
I thought it was next Thursday.
No. We're going to have a great time. We
certainly are.
Darcy Stakem, who is a chairman of Capital Markets for C.B. Richard Ellis, and she has been a dynamo for us in raising funds for this, and
sure.
Bob Cattell, who was the CEO of National Grid and Keyspan Energy Services, which serves Brooklyn and all of New York City and many areas in Long Island for gas and electric.
So, absolutely. Great people, great honorees. Absolutely.
Brooklyn.
Hey, Joe, before I let you go, I want to touch on something that is a misnomer. For many people who are so-called able-bodied, we all have preconceptions of what people can and can't do, whether you have a disability or not. I say we all have disabilities, whether they're real or apparent. But a lot of people think, okay, say I'll use myself as an example. Mark Farrell, he's visually impaired. He can't do carpentry, or he can't do jump out of a plane or scuba dive or do triathlons without seeing a swim course. So what happens is when people think of people with disabilities, they all automatically adjust their expectations, and that couldn't be anything further from the truth.
Well, that's absolutely true. You know, we do a lot of work in placements. Obviously, it's great to train people on how to do a resume, how to job interview, and how to seek your job. But the critical part is getting someone in a position. And a good point is we just got a blind consumer who has become a graphic artist. He has some vision, but very limited. for National Grid, which is a great organization because they are very willing. But we know that every time we bring someone to a employer, they say, oh, my God, this is going to be horrible. How am I going to deal with this? What do I have to do to make this work? It'll be too much for me. And so what we do is we bring the job coaches. We bring the equipment. We bring the equipment that person needs to do whatever they need, be it computers or whatever else they might need. And we try to lessen that burden. That's just a natural inclination. People who are doing business, they want to do the business. And they don't want to spend a lot of time worrying about one employee. That would be a great thing to do, but they need the help. So that's where our services come in. And we make it easier for the employer, and we make it a lot easier for the employee. And then before you know it, that's the best employee they've ever had.
Oh, absolutely. The most reliable.
Running out the door. That person has found a home and doing good and getting themselves toward the independence we want.
There's a gentleman who's on your staff, I believe, who may have gone through your services, who does incredible work. He made a video for me. He does your public social media stuff. I'm just blown away by his work. And that's just an example of one of many people I've encountered through your organization and through other organizations that serve people with disabilities. And more importantly, through corporations, just regular companies who hire persons with disabilities.
That's Ryan you mentioned, and he did come through. He's one of our consumers. We hired him because, one, he's so skilled, particularly in the area of computers and presentations and, you know, and really mixing things that I have no idea how he does it. But the change in him is dramatic. I recall when he first came on, head down, always, head down, no contact with anyone. He has some vision. He does see. So he would do that. And that today, he's in the meeting saying, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to get it done. And
fantastic.
It's a transformation. It makes me feel great. And I'm glad you met him. And you'll see him again tonight.
That is the ultimate proof in the pudding.
You got it.
And lastly,
so
talk about your new digs. You have a new home. As a matter of fact, tomorrow, I don't know who did the planning for this, tomorrow after your big soiree tonight is move-in day.
That's right. We are moving about 7 blocks away from where we are. We're in downtown Brooklyn. We're there for our staff and our consumers. The best way to get to there is the subway and the public transportation, and this is the hub. So we are currently on 57 Willoughby Street. We sold the building. We're out of there, and tomorrow we move in to 180 Livingston Street, which is just behind Macy's. Macy's on Fulton Street.
Sure.
So right behind it is 180 Livingston. We have 44,000 square feet of space. Everything will be combined. Our school will be with us on the same floor, as well as all of our services and all of our staff. My estimate is when we move in, morale's going up 100% just by moving in because it's a beautiful place. It's not lavish, but it is beautiful. And it's open, and lots of glass, light flowing in. It's going to be a great spot for us. And we'll be talking more about that down the road.
Absolutely.
About naming opportunities and other things. But more importantly, it's going to be a great boost to our agency.
The consumers deserve it. The employees deserve it. The community deserves it.
You got it. Thank you, Mark.
Joe Bruno, President and CEO of Helen Keller Services. Thank you so much. And I will look forward to seeing you this evening.
Good going, buddy.
All the best
bye-bye.
To you, pal. Cheers. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Always love your input. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. So talk about resiliency. I mean, we all have choices in life in terms of we can either sit on the sidelines, we can just be negative about what things have happened to us, or sometimes things that have not happened to us because that employer didn't hire me, or this person doesn't want to date me, whatever the case may be. We all know people who are like that. And then there are real instances that happen to people, real events. And it really kind of tells the tale of the person's character, how strong they are, how resilient they are, how they're able to face adversity in the eye. So with that, I'd like to introduce my guest. So you know it's going to be a very compelling interview, right? Melissa Meraz. How are you, Melissa? How are you?
I'm excellent. How is everybody?
Slide up to that microphone there.
Coming closer.
You got a parking spot.
Hey, how is everyone today? My name is Melissa.
Very good. You're very happy.
Thrilled
She's
to be here.
Very happy. I met Melissa, I think, 2 years ago at the Abilities Expo. It's a big seminar exposition thing in Edison, New Jersey, for persons with disabilities. So it's vendors, et cetera, et cetera. And I came over to your table, and instantly we had like this karmic experience where we just kind of connected. And we were talking about everything that you do, which will obviously our listeners will learn, and everything that kind of like gravitates us to why we do what we do.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember that day very clearly. It was very exciting meeting you. I left there feeling full of joy that there is other people fighting for the same, with the same mission, you know, and the same
goal.
Yeah, yeah. To help others, you know, and empower them and see their beauty.
So you are a therapeutic mind and body therapist.
Yes.
Integrated mind body therapist. If I don't have these $10 magnifiers on, I can't see anything. Integrated mind body therapist. That's a cool title.
It is. I do a lot of different things. I have my bachelor's in recreation therapy. I'm a recreation therapist, and my master's in yoga therapy.
That alone sounds way cool.
It's the best job ever.
So define that before we go further.
So ultimately,
recreational therapist.
Right. So ultimately.
So if I don't know how to recreate, I call you 1-800-MELISSA. Tell
100%.
Me how to recreate. 100%.
We forget, like, we're animals, right? And all animals learn through play. We learn through exploration and curiosity and inquiring. And that's the nature of the game, right? That's how we learn. That's how the brain develops. It's a very specific way the brain develops throughout the lifespan. And we need those things. We need to find joy and happiness and to be excited and to be in awe. And recreation provides those spaces.
To grow, sure.
Yeah.
Now, define recreation.
So it can be anything. The goal is to match the activity with the person, right? And we as beings are multidimensional. You know, we've got an energy.
Some of us are.
We all are, whether we're.
There's a few people that I wish had more dimensions, and some people I wish had less dimensions.
That's funny.
Sorry to interrupt you there, Melissa.
No, you're good. But right, we all have different components to ourselves. Even if you want to boil it down just to like mind body, like there's an energy that is it, that is us, that you know, is like our emotions and our feelings and breath and electromagnetic energy, like in our body.
What's that energy called?
Electromagnetic.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So just like physics, you know, science, mm-hmm. And then we're chemicals. So, you know, our being, it needs to be aligned and balanced. The body, all life is always striving for balance, for homeostasis. So the goal is.
I love that word.
It is a good, right?
It's a cool word.
It is kind of,
you know, some words actually really reflect what a definition really is. I think that one does.
I'd agree. So, right, finding an activity that helps bring us closer to that, because we can find like that flow space where we're just like in it, right? You're present, you feel invigorated, you feel empowered, you feel infinite. We all have had those things.
Sure.
And play very often gets us there spontaneously, which is a good thing because it gives us a taste, right? It reminds us like, oh, I'm infinite too.
Mm. Like, or this is why I work, so I can have extra money so I can recreate like,
yeah,
X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, yeah. So with recreation therapy, you know, it's an interview process to get to know the person better. Just like in yoga therapy, to find out more about their energetic level, like how they're feeling.
Yoga therapy. Okay, one thing at a time here. This is amazing.
Sorry.
I fuse them together
very much.
Good.
Because it's just, I've learned it through my own experience professionally and personally. So, right, you find out where they are physically, what's going on, any imbalances, whatever, their mind, their sense of connection with source, you know, like the greater connection with people or the universe, whatever. And then you find things that they love and fuse it all together almost so, in camouflage.
Talk
like,
to me about a...
So we could paint, you could do hockey.
Ah.
You could do yoga. You could climb a mountain. You could go scuba diving. You could go race car driving. It could really be anything. Ultimately, something that is sustainable, right? That is intuitive, and that someone's able to do on a regular basis.
Not like climbing Mount Everest, like I was watching on Real Sports last night.
Everest doesn't want you on it.
One of the best lines. Real sidebar right here is someone called it Everest Inc. Meaning like it's a business. Anyway, so I don't want to digress over there. So the reality is, so could this be a good thing in conjunction? Now, why would somebody, and I just don't know much about recreational therapy, want to go to like, say, cognitive therapy, Freudian therapy, and recreation therapy? Sounds like it would be a good pairing.
Yeah, I mean, right. So what I've learned, it's not always what you're doing. You know, we can all learn from a book what to do. It's so much more vital how you're doing it. You know, the therapeutic presence means everything.
Hmm.
The person who's with you, you know, how the environment.
So do you actually do the recreation events with this person?
Yeah, but the goal is that people find independence in their own, like, space with their own friends, right? I mean, because while we all are interconnected and, you know, need each other, because that's just biologically we're connected, we're also independent and full and whole ourselves. So, you know, the goal is that someone can do it.
I think the potential's there.
Yeah.
Because we all know people who are so clingy and needy.
I think we just need to remember, you know, get back, remember our base state. Remember that we came into this world whole.
Hmm.
We might have separated from that space. I mean, we might not be aligned with it anymore. But I do believe we're all whole.
Interesting. So talk about some of the... any more interesting things that you did with clients that were unique or eccentric? Besides painting, and I guess there's an answer to that.
Oh, gosh. So many things came to mind.
Well, I'll tell you what. You think about that, and I'm going to roll something here for everyone to see on Facebook Live. Of course, we're on Facebook Live. If you're listening at work, thank you very much. And hang in there. You only have about 6 more hours of work. But check out the Progressive Radio Network on Facebook Live. We're going to show literally Melissa Meraz standing on her head, and check this balance out. As a matter of fact, you can roll that anytime, Alex. Look at this. What an incredible handstand. What's the proper term for this? Hand?
Headstand.
Head.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to work up to that position? That ability.
That is a good question. I started exploring headstands after the brain injury, actually. And I don't know why. It was very – maybe because I was so out of whack that, like, being upside down was just right-siding up me. but that, like, the floating up, that took – it took time and dedication, just like anything, right, that –
the abdominal strength, Melissa, is just mind-boggling. And then you go backward like that? How many times would you fall over?
Oh, my gosh. The bruises out
really?
The wazoo. Yeah, like when I was first trying to, like anything, right?
Sure.
We all fall, and it's you got to be able to laugh at yourself. I remember the one time trying to, like, press up into that space. And like anyone, right, sometimes our muscles hop and skip and don't engage because we don't use our body.
Sure.
Yeah, we don't use our body as much as we really should be. We're very sedentary. Even when we don't think we are, sometimes... You know,
well, like you said, I'm not a sedentary person. I did yoga. It's ironic our timing here.
Yeah.
My first time in 13 years on Sunday, and I felt amazing after. For a few days, I was like, oh, my God. First of all, I said to my wife, I'm not trying to be boastful here, but it kind of reaffirms what I'm doing is good because I was able to do most of it. But then also it made me feel better like that versus, like, you know, I guess it would. You know, if you're not, you would be banged up and sore and miserable and be like, well, maybe I'll go back. But the point is, it's such an incredible art.
It is, yeah, an art and a science in a lot of ways because of how it shifts what's happening internally.
Yeah. So quickly, let's get to the yoga therapy because we have so much personal information that I want to get to with you. But I want to make sure that people have a background of where you are now because when we go backward, it kind of makes sense, the whole Melissa puzzle.
Gotcha. So yoga therapy is, an amazing field. The goal with anything is to help, you know, empower someone through education and experience and to find alignment. You know, like I said earlier, alignment of your mind, your body, your spirit, however you want to describe that. I mean, words sometimes get in the way. and your connection with the greater good, the greater energy force. So the goal of yoga therapy is to use movement, because we're in our body, mental exercises, which is really the heart and soul of it, because it was developed to train the mind, right? We are so enamored with our physical body, and then sometimes we forget the rest. We forget that there's energy and spirit and consciousness and an ancient wisdom that's, like, passed down in each one of our cells, you know, through eons, through generations back, that is subconscious.
It's kind of mind-boggling when you start thinking.
Yeah, it's like very quantum physics.
Yeah. Quantum boggling.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So the goal is to help someone align those spaces. So instead of using recreation, it's more a personal practice, like a daily, right? Because going to the gym for 1 hour a week and banging it out is not going to do anything. I mean, it will. If you're already at a homeostatic point, right? But if you're coming from a place of injury or trauma, you know, a daily practice is absolutely vital. And it doesn't mean it has to be 45 minutes or an hour or two. 5 minutes, 2 minutes,
sure.
5 seconds.
Cumulatively, it all adds up.
Yeah.
I mean, I do press-ups throughout the day, which would be the – what pose would that be?
Plank?
No. When you're on your stomach and you press all the way up.
Cobra,
yeah. So I'm doing Cobra all day long. And the ramifications are it's also working your chest, your tris, your core. But I'm ultimately doing it for my back and works your back. So anything, you know, anything in motion, anything tends in motion tends to stay in motion. So it's all
exactly
great stuff.
And it's getting that energy flowing evenly throughout the body, right? Because if it's flowing evenly throughout our body, then we're flowing with the greater force.
Yeah.
Sometimes we get a lot of hiccups and blockages in us. And when we see that in pathology and illness and disease, for the mind and body, you know.
Very sensible. Melissa Meraz, tell me about an incident when life was good. You're driving down the road and something unknown and unbeknownst to you is going to really change your physical and mental being and also your trajectory in life.
Absolutely. So it was a half day of school. It was actually a field day, so I was covered in mud. So imagine that situation.
A senior in high school.
I was following a friend home. It was just a blind spot. You know, it was a old, quote unquote, old country road. And a Yukon ended up hitting me while I was at a dead stop. They were probably going 80.
Wow.
Yeah, plowed straight into, like, me, my driver's side door.
You're lucky to be sitting here.
I always remember that.
Wow.
That's like constant.
I mean, you must have been told this by all the authorities that they probably never expected to see you alive in that car.
My parents thought I was dead.
Yeah.
The car looked like a dinosaur ate it. So the car spun out 50
and
yards.
And spit it out.
The car spun out 50 yards, uprooted a pine tree, caught on fire. Like, when I look at pictures now, like, that my dad had taken, it was just like, wow. Like, that's, like, my seat dropped, which I think saved my legs. I know my dad told me that the steering wheel and the gas and brake were on the other side of the car. I'm very fortunate no one else was in the car too. But yeah, I remember I woke up with my wrists and my ankles crossed and just frowning and thinking I want to go home. But then also remembering and thinking like this is my test. I guess to backtrack a little bit to paint the picture because it's a crazy crap. Nobody wants a car accident. Car accidents are terrible. Terrible.
I never heard someone say, wow, that was
that was a cool car
really
accident.
Really glad I got rear-ended.
That's why we watch NASCAR, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's terrible.
Exactly.
No,
it's part of the truth.
Oh. But prior to this, just to backtrack a smidgen, when I was 14, I was raped, and then I fell right into a drug addiction. And in the meantime, pulling straight A's so no one really knew anything was wrong. I'm adopted. I met my birth mom.
Super cool. Weeks before this accident.
Yeah, just weeks before.
So that's pivotal.
Huge, because she helped me so much, just in her essence. I met her, and then I was like, you know what? I'm not doing drugs anymore. I'm not letting this person control my life. You know, because I was afraid of everybody. I was afraid of my own judgment. I was afraid of other people. Things happen when
sure.
Assaults occur. But anyway, so I had made this promise to myself. I'm going to help the world and I'm going to influence, people so that they can live their greatest life and I'm going to live my greatest life and blah, 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 blah. And then a week later.
Wow. Which it's funny because you got sidetracked, but ultimately you did even more than what you planned out to do.
You know, I don't feel like it was sidetracked. You know, growing up, being adopted is a very interesting thing.
True.
I had this constant, almost obsessive need to know how things develop, how we develop, why we develop, why we're here. And it's always been part of my life. I've always loved art and science and philosophy. So in that space, I lovingly call the in-between space, there is an omnipresent knowing. I knew where I was at.
Yeah. Wow. Did you really know where you were at after the accident?
Oh, no, not at all.
Exactly. So let's get to that. You couldn't walk.
God,
you couldn't talk.
Couldn't read. Couldn't write. Oh,
so
it was a nasty.
So what was the prognosis? Were the doctors uncertain? Traumatic brain injury, TBIs, can be debilitating. Obviously,
yeah.
You were very, very fortunate to have this last only 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks?
Yeah, like the not walking. Yeah. Yeah, they do. The doctor told my parents to get their money back from Temple. Totally understandable. It was 14 years ago. The science was way different.
So the world was your oyster at this point. Then the accident happened, and next thing you know, doctor's telling you to ask for a refund.
Yep. And my parents didn't know. And thankfully, I had a really good background in science and brain science, neuroscience. I didn't really know it was like called neuroscience at the time. I was a kid. But always like seeking and looking into that stuff. So when I was told, you know, because the idea was that the brain doesn't regenerate. And I just always felt that was ridiculous. Like, every cell regenerates. Like, why would we say the brain doesn't regenerate? So with that omnipresent knowing,
well, there thank God it does, because all the drugs I did, I would be in trouble if it did not regenerate. And a lot of people out there.
Yes.
You. I'm talking to you. Yes, you.
It does regenerate. You just got to do the practices.
Exactly.
So when, like, when I did come to, like, came out of the fog, like, the first, like, then I started trying to escape, but I couldn't walk, so I'd be, like, army crawling out, and the doctor sent me home with my parents. I was being very difficult. and my parents had to go back to work. So I...
Well, that's just a different part of your personality that was getting exacerbated, I imagine.
Oh, my gosh. No self-control. Like, yes. I don't even know. Like, when I see pictures now of people who in you know, brain injury wards who have had... Like, sometimes they have...
Restraints?
Yes. Because you can be very combative. Like,
and self-harming.
Self-harming. You say things that are just not yourself. Mm. It's just there's no inner regulation or resource or reserve or, right? I mean, everything's all scrambled. You know, axons are broken. Dendrites are broken. Neural bodies are splattered.
It's almost like that computer starts doing wacky things. You're like, what? 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 Yeah. You got to do a hard boot. Unplug it. Let it sit. Hang out.
And everybody's different. Mm. Like, every injury is different.
Brain is different.
Exactly. So there's no way to know. And sometimes a person doesn't, most of the time, right? You don't know what you don't know until you know you don't know.
I'll get back to you on that one. But I don't know about that. So the reality is, so you're home.
Yep.
Your parents, you know, life goes on. Bills have to be paid.
Yeah, they do go back to work.
So what were you doing? And when were you, when did you realize, or did your parents approach you and say, you know what, maybe Temple is a good idea?
So my parents had to go back to work. I was a mess. I didn't feel in my body. For years, I always felt like I was kind of hovering above myself, like I was watching.
And you never had that sensation prior to the
accident? No. We don't have to get into the thoughts that I have about why that is.
Drug use.
What was that?
That was drug use before, if you ever did have that feeling. We'll get to that.
So I slowly started like painting again, you know, because I felt normal painting. Learning to redirect my energy, you know, when I couldn't move, breath. You can still direct your energy with your breath and be very, learn to be acutely aware of your body.
Yeah, I breathe diaphragmatically.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a ton of different breathing exercises that help move the energy in your body in different ways, which is a beautiful thing to learn. And
show
honestly,
number two with Melissa.
Yeah, everyone. That's like my bigger mission. Like, everyone should learn these things because it's intuitive within us already. So those things came very naturally. And I had a parrot. My mom had a parrot who like never left my side after that, which was absolutely fundamental because I felt seen just as a being. Whereas everyone else in the world, you could just feel it. You become acutely aware of like energy. And I knew something wasn't right, but I didn't know what it was.
Did you feel that from other people, their maybe their body language or their facial expressions, that they were worried about you being the old Melissa? Is she going to return?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm sure there's a ton of fears, you know. And
was that a conversation that was openly had?
No.
No. With your parents?
No.
With the doctor?
No.
So everyone was in denial?
Everyone. Yeah.
Sounds like one big Irish family.
When I say I don't know, it's probably not fair to me to say that because I don't have a lot of memories of that time.
Gotcha. That's
you know,
fair.
For like the next 7 years,
so can
my memory is very in and out.
Melissa and Dad's father on the phone, please?
Right?
Dear mom and dad.
You know what I do remember, which was absolutely profound? I don't know how many years it was later or like when, but I remember it was after dinner. My dad took me outside and we sat on the porch. And I remember it being cold and like the wood was wet. And him just staring off in the distance, like he couldn't even look at me. It was very upsetting to my parents. I don't know. They weren't prepped. They didn't know how to deal with me. You know
what a parent does.
Nobody does. Handles. They did an amazing job, like that. and I'm incredibly grateful because we all do the best we can with what we got at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's just that. And I remember, God, it's even embarrassing to say. So he couldn't even look at me, and he was just staring off and told me I needed to get the F over it and knock it off. And I remember feeling such hate.
That's understandable.
Yeah.
Here you are feeling trapped.
Yeah.
And you don't know where the exit is.
Yeah.
Or the off switch.
And then he got up and went back inside. And I sat with that for a moment. And that sensation of hate, went away. And then there was an opening and this sense of, I have a choice. He must believe I have a choice. So maybe I do.
Hmm.
Which was absolutely pivotal because it was this aha moment. There is this frequency shift, which made me start shifting my own beliefs. It was hard to control them.
Sure.
But it was just, anything, kinda constant practice.
Had you facing that direction.
It opened the box a little.
How much time are we talking about post-accident is this conversation about?
That I don't know.
A year, two, three?
Maybe a year or two.
Okay. So college was put off for a year?
No.
No, you still went.
I went.
Was there any question about your cognitive ability?
Yes.
And your parents were all happy for you to go? And
they were not. They were terrified.
You were the one.
I was very combative. I was sleeping all the time, right? I felt like the next months I just slept. I got up to eat and go to the bathroom. Sometimes
is that typical for TBI?
Yeah, you sleep a lot. Very lethargic.
And you were an athlete. You were fit before this accident.
Which I'm very grateful for.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure that
probably,
aided.
Yes.
Yeah, that definitely
your recovery.
Helped. Definitely helped. You know what, though? The body does amazing things. I know the hospital thought I was on drugs, which is funny because I had just quit. But the body.
If you look hard, I'm sure you'll find something that I misplaced.
But because the nervous system does this crazy thing when the brain gets injured, it jacks up the sympathetic nervous system so much that your heart is just beating out of control like you're on coke. Yeah. So my body was working really hard to keep me alive.
Fascinating.
Which it is fascinating. I mean, they know what that is now. It has a term, but I forget. So that was him saying that was really important. I went to college. I'm very grateful that I had already taken classes. I had signed up for classes I had a really good background in, because new learning, memory, right? Think about everything your brain takes care of, not only your physical body, but memory, which allows you to learn. If you can't remember, you can't learn. Communication, I had aphasia, so bad. I couldn't communicate. Couldn't make coherent sense.
Isn't that common in stroke victims?
Yep. And Alzheimer's, lots of different things.
So,
so frustrating. And I was a writer. I loved to write. And all of a sudden, my most favorite thing was taken
away. You won awards.
Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't write. And I couldn't talk. And it was incredible.
Were you angry? Did you go through a state of anger?
Absolutely. And frustration and embarrassment. And shame. I felt oh, I'm stupid.
Did you have a good friend that you could confide in?
So everyone kind of went away. It's a very isolating situation. I don't blame anyone. At 18, how do you deal with someone who's combative and saying mean things? The things that are being said are kind of...
Well, especially with the injury, because if you know anything about TBIs, even if you're an 18-year-old kid and you're going away to college and one of your good friends had an accident, you're going to be like, that's a bummer. I'm going to see him when I get home. But what can I do?
You can't do anything.
Yeah.
And that's fun, and that's I don't know. I guess I look at it as all a beautiful, crazy situation, Because when I left, I went to school. Because I was determined, which is I'm grateful because it was like the sandbox to relearn so much, and I didn't have anyone looking at me like I was broken. They might have thought I was a little off.
It's a new start.
They probably thought I was something was a little awry.
You should be embraced in college to not be the person who's walking a straight line.
Yeah.
You think differently, maybe you look differently, you sound differently, and you do things differently. And that's my whole mantra. My difference makes me stronger when I speak at schools and corporations.
And I was exposed to people. I don't know if I really always earned the grade, but I had a lot of teachers that were very. I don't want to say and knew I was trying.
Yeah.
And gave me opportunity to
prove yourself.
Yeah. which was helpful because I learned more that way. I learned about breathing and about, you know, learning to learn again. Like I already had like school always came easy. So I learning to learn, which was something my dad always instilled, but it really re-emerged the whole idea, like from the ground floor, like because we don't always remember the building blocks of how we do those things.
Sure, yeah.
So
yeah.
It was this different perspective as like a conscious human, like, ooh,
wow.
How does all of this start?
My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on a Progressive Radio Network. My guest is Melissa Meraz. It's a very cool name, very Hollywood sounding. Question for you.
Yes.
Because I want to get to some other very important factors of your life. So you connect easily with people. So social work, was that part of the game plan before the accident?
Yeah, that was
so
the
you continued.
Plan.
Okay.
So I went into school to do social work because I you know, it was like, help everyone embrace what they love so they can make a job at it and help make the world a better place while they are being authentically them. My dad's a mechanic. You know, I love my father. He's like the smartest man in the world. And he loved it. But I, you know, growing up, I was like, oh, maybe you don't love it anymore. And it really, it struck something in me, you know. And I had a lot of friends who, you know, did drugs and got in trouble. And I was like, no, you don't have to go that way.
Sure.
So, yeah. And then, like, what happened with me, you know, what happened to me.
So we're going to go there right now. At age 14, we're going to kind of be sort of brief on this in terms of the actual incident because I want to get to the post part, the recovery part, that you had a friend over who was a few years older than you. Maybe he was 16-ish, and he raped you.
Yep. I don't know where you want me to go with that. I'm sorry. Give me a
well, it's kind of an open door, but it's number one. I'm so sorry that happened to you and happens to anybody, on this planet. The fact that anyone thinks they can overtake someone's body, it's just unthinkable, unfathomable, and not enough people obviously get punished for this. And this boy who's an adult now obviously didn't get punished as well. And we're not going to harbor on that fact, but let's talk about the recovery aspect because, you know, like many, many victims, you were shamed. You thought maybe possibly you, I don't want to put words in your mouth,
no,
but we had
spoken
before that you had maybe possibly brought this on yourself. What did I do wrong? Totally normal questioning. But this person was a little bit of an animal at 16, certainly. And then you turned to drugs as a refuge.
Yeah. It's a funny thing what happens in the psyche when something like that happens, you know, because we build our idea of a safe space around us, you know, right? As creatures, we need safety.
It's a coping mechanism, that's for sure.
Yeah. So my choice was to go towards drugs. And it brought that idea of homeostasis, at least I thought it did. You know, I wouldn't call it that now.
Well, it probably lessened the pain.
Yeah.
So that is a homeostatic.
But, yeah. I mean, when I think about it now, you know, because I harbor no hate or, you know, and again, it's one of those things. You look back at life and you realize everything you've learned and everything you've gained from that. You know, a lot of us give our power away to others because we feel something happened to me. And even though the most awful and wretched things can happen, it happened to your physical body and your mental body and your energetic body, but your soul is there and intact. And when people do things like that, it's a projection of what's happening within themselves, right?
Sure, you know, on many levels.
On many, many levels. And again, that doesn't forget. It doesn't mean that it's okay. It just means that we can all find space of forgiveness and understanding, even for the most wretched of crimes, you know.
It's ironic how all these things have come together, and I wish you didn't have so much practical real-life experience to apply in this
field. I'm really grateful that I do.
That you are going to be one of the best therapists out there because on many levels, mind-body integrated therapy, because of your past. I mean, that's the reason why I speak. There's a lot of people out there in the world who are speakers and they're great speakers. But when you speak about something, real life experience, that trumps anything. Sorry to use the Trump word.
No, I don't care. I have no feelings about that. But
I'm numb as well.
Yeah, it's the truth, though. Feeling, knowing something is different than feeling something.
Or reading about it.
Yeah, 100%. Like, that's just cognitive. And we are, as a culture, we are so obsessed with cognitive intelligence. So ridiculously consumed by it when we forget that we're feeling beings first. Energy moves through us. And it's feelings. Like, we ascribe meaning to it and say it's an emotion, you know? Our mind, our brain picks up energy frequencies that our senses pick up, and it is transmitted as a feeling first and then goes to the cerebral cortex and is made into a coherent thought. We're feeling beings. So when you can feel, you can connect.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you can make a difference because people know your heart's in it, right?
And before you could get to that point, unfortunately, you had two attempts on your life.
Not on purpose. Yeah. Not on purpose.
Yeah, just drug-related overdose.
Yeah, well, yeah. The one was a drug-related overdose, again, accident. And then the car accident.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Which was, again, a very powerful, moving, you know, like, to have that experience at a young age, that in-between space, that omnipresent knowing, that sense of infinite, and yet, like, no, I didn't fulfill what I came here to do.
It's pretty astute for being 17 or 18.
I don't think that was something else. Yeah. That knowing,
interesting.
You know, because when I like back in my body,
good sound effect.
I don't know, because that's literally, yeah, exactly. I remember that space very clearly.
I want to make sure we end on something very, very significant.
Yeah.
On your title of who you are and the being of who you are. How your name, your last name,
mm-hmm.
the emphasis, obviously you met your birth mother a few weeks, as you mentioned, before the accident.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about how you learned the significance of your last name.
The significance of my last name? It means frost in Polish. When I said earlier, because you asked me, well, my grandparents always pronounced it Moroz or Moraz, and then I was in linguistics class, and the teacher kept saying, like, Moroz, Moroz, and I was like, it wasn't when I said that to you. It wasn't like a significance thing. It was just like a.
So the whole
my whole life, I was thinking it was
up to this point.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Off a cliff.
I don't know why.
My God,
that was
all right. Well, I tried. You should have just went with it and said yes. Well, there was a reservation in the Antes, and anyway.
I'm not a good maker
Melissa,
of tales.
It's just incredible to have met you, to have learned what you've been through, the person you've become on the other end through when you came through all this adverse conditions, and it's just remarkable that you can, the human spirit can be so strong and bulletproof, and it's a testament to the human spirit, and what a better person, no better person to be in your position in an integrated mind-body therapist than yourself, to be out there and serving the public as you do.
Well, thank you. It's a responsibility, right? We all have a responsibility with our skills that we develop and the things that, you know, talents that we're given. The goal is to help with, right, concussions and CTEs and brain injuries are a serious issue.
Absolutely.
You know,
too ubiquitous.
Yeah, and I'm very grateful that I have the ability to bridge the medical side and the experiential side, right? Because, again, you can't help someone through books and what you know.
No.
There's no
sure.
Shortcutting, hardwiring the brain, you know, and the things I share will help.
How can people find you? You're located in Pennsylvania.
I am, but I will lovingly and happily travel to you. My company is 360 Agility. The website is not done yet, so
we're working on it. We're not that agile.
I'm not that agile. I have many skills. Technology is not
Melissa,
one.
Melissa, what a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Mark. It was a
Namaste.
Pleasure being here. Namaste.
My name is Mark Farrow. If you'd like me to speak at your school, college, or corporation, check out markfarrowmotivation.com. Markfarrowmotivation.com. Vote today, please. It's primary day wherever you are. See you next week. Enjoy.